Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight on Life Rattle number 1194, we bring you three Life Rattle classics written and read by Ellen Burke. Tonight's featured stories come from Ellen Burke's Terre de Caine collection, stories of life in Blanc-Sablon, the village Burke grew up in. Blanc-Sablon sits on the southern coast of Labrador, across from the northern peninsula of Newfoundland. The closest city is Quebec City, 500 miles away. Although Blanc-Sablon is a Quebec village, the culture is more like Newfoundland. Blanc-Sablon has about 350 to 400 people, descended from settlers who came from Ireland during the famine in the 1840s, as well as settlers from France. The closest village is in Labrador, about 4 miles away. There is a road going through, but the road dead ends about 40 miles in either direction. Blanc-Sablon was named by Jacques Cartier in the 1530s. Blanc-Sablon means white sand. Cartier called the area the land God gave to Cain, because it is so barren and rocky, hence the name of the collection, Terre de Caine, or Land of Cain, vignettes. Ellen Burke was born in Blanc-Sablon in 1960, the eighth of 11 children. Her father, the teacher in the village, also worked as a carpenter for the local Catholic mission. He built schools and churches in towns along the coast. Her mother, when she finished raising 11 children, became mayor for 2 terms. In 1974, when she was only 14, Burke left Blanc-Sablon to go to high school in the eastern townships of Quebec, 1,500 miles from home, the only option for someone in her village who wanted to go to high school. She boarded with a number of families in the townships for the 3 years she attended high school and returned to the village upon graduation, where she worked as a clerk at the Hudson Bay store for a year. When she was 18, Burke went to Montreal and worked as a housekeeper for a wealthy family in the affluent town of Mont-Royal. When she couldn't stand it anymore, she came to Toronto. In Toronto, she worked in restaurants, as a nanny, at the Women's Movement Archives, as a laborer doing demolition and construction. She also went to university for 3 years. Ellen Burke finally became a painter and started her own business in 1987 called Just Paint. In 1992, Ellen Burke received a Canada Council Explorations Grant to work on the Terre de Caine stories. Recently digitized from an analog collection of Life Rattle treasures, the three stories we present to you tonight have not been heard since they were last aired in 1995. Let's listen now to tonight's first story, Jackpot, written and read by Ellen Burke.
Jackpot by Ellen Burke. Celestine is 5 years old. There are only 9 children in a Jack family at this point. Every September, when the kids went back to school, Mr. Bouillette from the Granville Mission arrived in Terre de Caine with the box of the church's pickup full of wooden crates. He took the crates to the church basement, unloaded them, lined them up on the floor, and opened their lids. Outside, women and children formed a line and waited for Mr. Bouillette to open the door for the jackpot to begin at 9 o'clock. With Lukey in her arms, Jimmy by the hand, Celestine and Simon playing tag around her skirt, Leffy stood near the end of the line. "For Christ's sake, ye two, stop the running around," Leffy hissed at Celestine and Simon. Greta stood behind Leffy. Greta's 4-year-old, Clint, laughed. Greta slapped Clint across the side of his head. Clint opened his mouth wide and howled. "Shut up!" Greta snapped and slapped him again. Clint shut his mouth but couldn't be quiet, so Greta held up her hand and motioned to hit him again. Clint stifled himself, while his shoulders hove up and down, and he squeezed his legs together and tried not to pee. Mr. Bouillette opened the door. Everyone in the line went quiet. "Good morning, ladies," Mr. Bouillette said. He held the door while the women and their kids walked in. "Celestine, sit on the chair and hold the baby," Leffy said. "Don't worry, you'll get a chance to have a look." Celestine sat down and held the baby. Clara, who was Celestine's age, ran around the wooden crates that lined up in rows of four on the floor. Josephine, Clara's mother, pulled a yellow sweater with pearl buttons out of one of the crates. She tried it on Clara. The sweater fit. Josephine gave Clara a quarter to give to Mr. Bouillette for the sweater. The women pulled clothes out of the crates and held them up for inspection. Celestine pinched Lukey until he screamed. Leffy looked over. Celestine rocked the baby. Lukey screamed. Leffy walked over, put her pile of clothes on a chair, and snatched Lukey out of Celestine's arms. She jiggled him and glared at Celestine. "Run across the barrens to the house and get his bottle. Mind when you cross the road." "Why can't Simon go?" Celestine asked. "Because he's only four and you, little miss, are five, so git before I give you a good licking." Celestine looked at the crates. "I hate that baby," she whispered as she ran across the road and barrens to get the bottle out of the water tank on the stove. When Celestine got back, Leffy had a bed made for Lukey and a pile of clothes. Celestine handed the bottle to Leffy. Leffy laid Lukey on his side in the clothes and stuck the bottle in his mouth. She and Celestine went to the crate that was nearly empty. There were toys at the bottom. Leffy picked Celestine up and put her down in the crate to pick out a toy. Leffy continued searching for clothes that might fit any of her nine kids. Celestine picked out a rubber baby doll with three red hairs painted on its head. Celestine climbed out of the crate and went to sit beside Lukey on the floor. Lukey whimpered as he slept. Celestine lay down beside him, hugged the doll, and sang, "Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. When the bough breaks, the cradle will fall. Down will come, baby, cradle and all."
That was Ellen Burke reading her story Jackpot. We will continue with tonight's second story, Blood, written and read by Ellen Burke.
Blood by Ellen Burke. In this story, Celestine is 12. Bernice, her sister, is 13. Martha, another sister mentioned, is 15. Simon is 1 year younger than Celestine. Celestine crouched in her pajamas under the hall light to read Stranger in the Mist. Stranger in the Mist had a painting of a waterwheel mill beside an English river on the cover. Inside, it told about an orphan woman who was sick and poor and sad when a dark-haired stranger, a man, came from far away to her little town and told her she was beautiful. Celestine got up from the hallway floor and went into her bed when she saw the red glow over the black sea of Terre de Caen. She did not want to come to the end of Stranger in the Mist. Celestine dreamt. She floated on her back in a warm gray river. Celestine woke. Voices and heat from the kitchen downstairs with Saturday smells of pea soup and her father's cigarettes. She chanted with her breath. Fog bellows, soup mist and smoke. Heat waves up in stringy dances from the fire in the cast iron stove. more fog. When will it end? Daddy's home. It's April Fool's. I have to watch myself today. My bed is a boat. Celestine felt wet. She felt sticky between her legs. Shit, I've pissed the bed. She threw back the blankets and swung her feet to the floor. Blood. Blood on her pajamas. Blood on the sheets. It's the period. That book, Martha's books, You're a Young Lady Now, told about the period. Ma! Ma! What do you want, Cells? Ma, come up! It's private! Celestine heard Bernice, her older sister, who always said Celestine was stupid, on the stairs. Celestine pulled the covers over the blood. Bernice, get back here, Leffie ordered. I'll be up in a minute. Hurry up, it's important. I'm coming, Leffie chanted as she came up the stairs. Ma, I'm full of blood. Celestine pulled back the covers from her legs. Leffie slapped her hand to her chest. Sacred Heart of Jesus, she said. Do you hurt? It's funny. I don't hurt. I'm full of blood, Ma. Celestine lowered her voice. I smell like meat. Raw meat. That's the smell of blood. It's your period. Looks like you're a heavy bleeder is all. Stay there. Take off your pajamas. Leffie went downstairs. What's the matter, Ma? Bernice asked. Cells pee in her bed? Clear up the dishes and keep your trap shut. Leffie turned to James and Grandmother Jack. Celestine is fine. Celestine heard her mother open the water tank on the stove. She heard Leffie ladle out warm water with the dipper. Leffie returned upstairs with an enamel wash basin, towels, and a face cloth. Leffie flapped a towel and spread it on the floor beside the bed. Celestine, standing naked, stepped on it. Leffie wrung out the face cloth in the water, washed blood from Celestine's legs, and handed Celestine the cloth. Well, my dear, Mother Nature sure played an April fool on you. Leffie took the sheets, piled them with the pajamas, took the cloth from Celestine, and rubbed the blood from the oilcloth on the mattress. It tickles as it trickles red rivers down my legs, Celestine said. Now don't you go mumble no poems about this, Leffie snapped. Ma, this is amazing. Like hell, Leffie said. It's a bloody curse that every woman's got to put up with. Men got it easy. They don't carry no god-dee parasites that suck your strength and tear your guts to bring the world another brat. Leffie snatched the blood-stained pile from the floor. Stay on that towel till I get back, she snapped. Celestine sank to her knees. Stupid bitch. She squeezed back tears, shivered, and cupped her hand under her to catch blood drips. She shuffled on her knees, the towel still under her, across to the dresser. She opened the bottom drawer, pulled out a green plaid flannel shirt, and shuffled and slid on the towel, one hand under her catching the drips, the other holding the shirt, across the floor back to the wash basin. Celestine dunked her bloody hand in the bloody water and dried it on a corner of the bloody towel and pulled the shirt over her shoulders. Leffie came back with a bundle of Kotex pads and an elastic belt. Stand up. Celestine stood. Leffie pulled the belt over Celestine's head and body. She adjusted the belt around Celestine's waist. Celestine shook. She cried and tried not to cry. Stop blubbering and pay attention, Leffie said. Leffie threaded and knotted the ends of the pad into the metal hooks on the belt. Now put on your underwear and get dressed. When that pad gets sogged, wrap it in paper and throw it in the garbage drum. I'll put pads in your drawer. Use 'em when you need 'em, all right? Celestine stood there in her flannel shirt and belt. She nodded. Leffie went downstairs. Fuck her, Celestine thought. And it's her fault she had 12 of us, not mine. And I hate the stupid belt, and this pad feels like a 2x4 between my legs, and the blood tickles when it drips out. And I like my period. I do. God damn, Mom. She spoils everything. And she called my breasts sewing spools, and Simon heard. Big Mouse Simon, who told everyone at school. I hate her and her big baggy tits and her fat gut from too many babies. And it's not my fault, and I won't be like her, because I'll be like someone I've never met. And I'll write poems and not just say I would if I had my time back, if I didn't have ye kids. And I won't marry until I'm at least 25. And I will write, and not like the time I wrote the winter poem and no one believed I wrote it. And God, I hate my life here. And I hate Mom. And why was I born here? In 2 more years and I'll be out of here. I'll live with a family far away. A family who likes me. And 2 years isn't long. And just help me, God, to get out of here alive. Celestine! Come down here and help with the housework. It was Bernice. Celestine looked out the window, and it was too foggy to see the sea, but Frederick's stone house rose like a small glacier from the reddish rock. And Greta, Frederick's wife, once years ago, Greta passed Celestine and Clara, who played dolls on a stone slab by Aunt Mark's house. And Greta had a red stain on her white pants, and Clara said, "Did you cut your bum?" And Greta turned around and yelled, "None of your fucking business!" And Celestine shouted at Greta, "Your mother shit on your father's dick, you snibbox!" And Celestine felt afraid as she stared out the window at Frederick's house now. "Celestine! Get down here now!" Celestine looked at the fog, and she saw the car with Mom and Dad and Bernice in the front seat, and Grandmother Jack and Simon and Lukey in the back. And then she saw an airplane full with everyone in Terdekan inside. And that airplane roared as it crashed into the car, and a big explosion shot pieces of shiny burning metal into the sky until they fell and sizzled into the sea. And she saw for a second charred black silhouettes of everyone. And in another flash, everything melted into white, white heat. "Celestine, get down here!" Celestine walked down the stairs. "Well, she's come down from her ivory tower," Bernice said. "Big ass," Celestine said, and flashed her middle finger at Bernice. Bernice turned her back, stuck out, and wagged her ass at Celestine. "You two got better things to do," Grandmother Jack said. "Two young women acting like 5-year-olds. Celestine ran upstairs. Bernice threw a tea towel at her, but Celestine ran to the bathroom and locked the door. She looked in the mirror above the sink. She pulled down her pants and stared at the pad. "Young woman," she said in her mind. "It really smells like raw meat. And this is a woman's blood. The flesh of the animal. A female. A woman. A woman with hidden things. My God, I am a woman, and I bleed from a womb and wounds, and men bleed from wounds, and every woman bleeds in secret every month. And in suffering shall she give birth, except I am a woman, and I'm not suffering. And only the egg and the ready walls are bleeding out. And this is not birth, it's just a period." She remembered Bernice's first period. Bernice passed out at school. That's how we all knew about it. What if I'm stuck somewhere with no pads? What then? Nuns have this too. Grandmother Jack and Mom hide to wash off the blood. And I remember when Aunt Jean sent me to Butt's store with that note and only one word on it, Kotex. That note was folded smaller than a dime, and I handed it to Butt, who pulled out the box and a length of brown paper from under the counter. Secret. Nobody said Kotex. Celestine pulled her pants up, left the bathroom, and went downstairs. Grandmother Jack and her father talked about the fog. Celestine walked past and into the pantry. She looked in a washtub where her pajamas and the bedclothes soaked in blue. Oh, God, Daddy knows, she thought. 2 days later, Celestine sat on the pail and looked out the bathroom window at the brook in the April twilight. The brook looked like whipped foam as it rushed over the rocks and down the hill. The snow picked up the red violet of the sky. Celestine tingled. This time, no red flares appeared among the brown waste in the pail. The pad she had worn all day was dry. She wrapped the pad in a page she ripped out of the Eaton's catalog, a page with babies in Christmas sleepers. Celestine carried the wrapped pad downstairs, through the kitchen and out the porch door to the garbage drum. She ran back to the kitchen and got the wooden matches down from the oven warmer on top of the stove. She went around the first floor of the house and picked up paper trash. She went back out to the drum and put in the paper. Celestine struck a match and lit the paper in the drum. She watched the pad wrapped in babies in their sleepers burn. Celestine shivered and sang. The universe is singing, the Lord and God is one. Hear the echo ringing, let thy will be done. Da 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 da, it's good news through the seas, and all the birds are singing all your words and harmonies. The fire cracked, and heat shimmered waves as flames, orange and red against the cold gray sea and blackening sky, twirled and leapt from the drum.
That was Ellen Burke reading her story Blood. Our final story tonight is actually a short series of glimpses of life in Blanc Sablon. Let's listen now to Terre de Cane Vignettes, written and read by Lynn Burke.
Terre de Cane by Lynn Burke. On the map. Out across the water are Alibi and Patsy's Islands. Southeast of Alibi and Patsy's are the Blue Hills of Newfoundland. South of the islands is water to the border of the sky. From a ledge of rock on the hills behind the village, Terre de Cane feels like the Neverland of the world. Tomorrow I will leave these 48 houses and 313 people. I will leave because there is no high school, and I am 14. Yesterday, the last of the wolf huskies were shot. In the past 14 years, Terre de Cane has gotten electricity, telephones, skidoos, a police station, and CBC. Today, I take Terre de Cane inside me. I carry the rocks, brooks, marshes, the people and their houses. I carry the reels and jigs, the boats and sleigh dogs. I store the sea and the sky. I will take everything Terre de Cane gave me. Uncle Lo. Uncle Lo was the best singer in Terre de Cane. He sat children on his knees and sang The Rose in June and The Star of Logie's Bay. Uncle Lo was the village drunk. He beat Aunt Jean and walked the road singing out, You're all fucking frogs. Ye got not a decent cocksucking woman among ye. Uncle Lo went on a spree a few times a year. Every wedding, Christmas, Easter, and Terre de Cane time, he went to church, someone's house, or the town hall, sang old Irish Newfoundland tunes, got drunk, and stayed drunk for a week. Uncle Lo hated Terre de Cane. He called the village a Quebec hellhole. But he had to live there because he was married to a Terre de Cane girl, and he was kicked out of his own village Savage Cove, Newfoundland. Howard. No one, except his mother, ever saw much of Howard. Howard was caught once, crouched out of sight behind Mickle's Knob. He cleared a patch of ground. Old Sol said Howard made a chain of dandelions, buttercups, and bluebells, and wound them around the rock pile on Mickle's Knob. One Christmas, Howard went to a party. He played the accordion. He looked dazed when he played. His jaw moved around with the reels and jigs. He beat his feet on the floor like a drum. Howard did dirty things to the Terre-de-Caen girls. He caught Mary one day, knocked her down, pissed in her face. Another time, he caught Annie, dragged her into his father's shed. He tied her up, hung her up by her feet, tore off her hospital uniform, swung her back and forth, held an axe to her head, told her to be quiet or she was dead. Annie screamed just once. Sebastian heard. He broke down the door. Howard went for Sebastian with the axe. Sebastian knocked Howard out. Sebastian cut Annie down, helped her up the rocks to her mother's house. Annie's mother took her in, put her straight to bed, yelled at Annie's brothers and sisters to shut up and get out. Annie's father came home from work in his overalls without his tools. Annie's mother called him up the stairs. Annie cried, "Howard hurt me! Howard hurt me!" Annie's father left her room, walked down the stairs, pushed one of his sons out of the way. He stomped down the rocks, shook his fist at Howard's window. Howard's mother locked Howard in his room. She faced Annie's father, told him, "Howard is sorry. I punished him." Annie's father yelled, "You keep that animal in." He turned around and stomped back home. The teacher from Montreal. Mr. O'Reilly, our grades 4 and 5 teacher, came from Montreal. "He's a weird one," people said. "He walked by himself on the beach at night. With his easel, he stood up on the hill, where the back of everyone's house was turned against the north, and painted Terre-de-Caen from behind. Everyone was suspicious of him. People called him a sissy." Mr. O'Reilly left our classroom in tears. Stunned, we heard him slap the double doors downstairs open. The doors creaked back and snapped shut. We rushed to the windows and watched him run to the post office where he boarded. At the back of our classroom, his paintings of flowers were stabbed with dozens of jagged staples. Vera flew into Jake. "You bastard," she hissed, and kicked him. "Now he'll think we're nothing but a bunch of wild animals." "That's exactly what you are," said the principal, who walked into the room. "Get to your seats." We scurried to our desks. Stupid tears fell on my drawings of princesses. The principal plucked the paintings from the wall. "I want you all to know," she said, "Mr. O'Reilly leaves on the mail plane tomorrow. He heard last night that his mother is dying." Early magic. The foghorn from Patsy's Island lets out a thick moan. I get up before my brothers, sisters, parents, and grandmother and sneak outdoors. The world is a salty shadow. Fog whiffs in from the sea. Inward and north it goes over the hills where the rocks stick out. The rocks are jagged and threaten to fall on the houses below. I watch from my cave in the sandbank. I breathe in deep. I must be eating ghost dust. I might grow fat and white, become a cloud, or I could splash like soggy ashes into the water. Nothing happens. The houses lean at my back. I creep past them. I fly down the sand dunes into the clouds on the pink sandy shore. Little gusts of mist follow me, sheer pale gray angels. I swoop and glide, arms outstretched. I slice the wet, chilly air. A voice trails to me. My magic fades. My jacket wings fall, damp and limp, to my sides. The sea sucks back its wave. I cannot move. I lean. Dear God, it's the sea witch. Sweet Jesus, I'll be good. I won't sneak out anymore. A warm wetness trickles down my legs. I lean. Mommy? Oh God, no, not Mommy. Mommy. Oh, thank you, God. Ma, I'm coming. Grandmother Jack. Grandmother Jack kept her money in a wad of Kleenex between her breasts. She told stories about the olden days when she had a house of her own. In Flowers of the Bay, Newfoundland, she kept a rope soaked in a wash tub in her pantry. She used the rope to lace her boys. One day, while Grandmother pickled cabbage for the winter, her six-year-old daughter Molly caught fire. Molly's apron strings caught a flame from the burning garbage. Two of Molly's brothers doused her with the water. Grandmother Jack said it was the water that killed Molly. She put Molly straight to bed. Then she laced her boys with the soaked rope. They had to learn that if you threw water on someone afire, you could kill them, she said. Molly peeled the skin off her arms. She died before supper, before the priest made it across the bay. Josephine, a skipping song. Josephine hated sex, hated kids, did her duty, had 12, did it well. She is proud, none of them went to jail. Aunt Solange. Aunt Solange died young. I don't know why. At her wake, Uncle Ben forced my hand to her cracked lips. He said the touch would make me forget her yellow skin, sunken eyes, and the stink. When I tried to sleep, her corpse rolled towards me. Her eyes popped open like the ones on my doll. After her funeral, her young children were put out among the older ones. Uncle Maury, her husband, moved from one to another. He gave his girls a hard time. He got a reputation for being a dirty old man. Between Aunt Solange and the wife before her, he fathered 22 kids. He always had a place to go. The Merry Dancers. In Terdekaine, the northern lights are called Merry Dancers. They quiver rose into blue, yellow into green across the north sky above the hills. They dance rippling curves and surge from east to west, and then reel back again. A child learning to whistle is told that if she whistles while the merry dancers dance, they bellow down to her and swirl her aloft into their colors. She is consumed by them and is gone forever.
That was Ellen Burke reading Terre de Cane vignettes. This concludes Life Rattle number 1194. My name is Lori Callis. Arnie Achtman recorded Aline reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Life Rattle will bring you more stories next Sunday night at 9 o'clock.